We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 347. It's early in the morning for us. Scott is back from his weekend in Tampa. I'm back from my vacation. And we both signed on to Skype this morning and realized we are wearing the exact same thing, same shirt, pretty much the same hat. Good morning, Scott.
For everybody who says that we sound too much alike, well, now you're really screwed because we're wearing the exact same goddamn thing. I'm alive. I'm back home from Tampa. Had an amazing time. I think everybody there really did have a good time. It was a lot of fun, man. It was just a ton of fun. But Yankees split with Tampa, right? I got to one of the wins. Unfortunately, we lost on Saturday. But as the Rays Twitter account says, you know, it was an effort that was worth a win. What do they say? Like, oh, it took you extras to beat us.
It took extra innings to beat us. The Rays Twitter account has gone so far trolling that I'm actually starting to like them.
See, I don't think they're very good, though. That's the problem.
But it's so trolly that you can't help but respect it.
I disagree with you. Because the way that they troll is like at an infantile manner. Like the fact that
yes,
you do,
exactly.
But I actually think there may be like a very young person running it.
It's okay, man.
Like it took them.
They took a kid out of Tampa High School and just said, "Hey, what would you tweet now?"
I don't know. It's just weird, is what it is. So yeah, I don't respect it. That's for sure.
Well, they treat Twitter like Twitter is meant to be. It's not a professional platform. It is the wild, wild west of the internet, and whatever is said is fine. You just move on to the next day. I think it's kind of funny. Did you plan on going to that Friday night game, or was that just like a last minute thing?
Yeah, last minute thing because so. I got to kind of recap like what happened as far as me getting down there and all that too, because it's highly relevant. we went on Thursday evening, like 4th of July. I think it's not many people are probably traveling on there. There were plenty of people traveling. And unfortunately, there were a whole bunch of storms in Florida all day. And I think into the day before that. So all the flights were delayed and we had an hour delay getting to the airport. Knew that, like, okay, fine, an hour delay. Then we get there. Long story short, I did not put my head on the pillow until 5 a.m. on Saturday. So we were there all night. We didn't take off until 3 something in the morning. Maybe a little bit before that, but it was...
Did you think about just cutting your losses, going back home and trying the next day?
Yeah, I did. I thought about it. Well... The flights were a problem. That's the thing. A lot of them were booked, and it was not easy to get down there. So, you know, if we went home and then back, we would have been screwed anyway. So anyway, yeah. So got down there late, and because of that, it actually helped me get to the Friday night game because my son Kemp's day was just thrown off completely, and we're like, whatever, we're in the wind now. Like it doesn't matter. The kid has like, there's no set time for him to go to sleep. We're just gonna ride this one out because we slept like a lot of Friday. I actually went on to, I went on to, and just started looking everywhere for seats. Ended up on SeatGeek. Got seats for the two of us. And Kemp was free. I was in section 208. Fourth row, which essentially was a suite,
which was what, like $30.
It was I actually paid like $50 for them, yeah, each.
I guess, and for any game other than the Yankees, that would have been like $5.
Yes. Well, they literally had $2 entry night a couple days before that when the Orioles came in and beat their ass.
Yeah, no, I mean that's good that you saw a win because that would have sucked to go all the way down there, suffer through airport delays. And I guess with a kid it's different. Like I remember when I was coming down for Tampa this year for spring training, first of all, I guess it's just Tampa bad news all around, whether it's the ballpark or the airports and the flights. It's just
or forgetting your bags. Yeah,
it's just forgetting your bags out after a shit show of a weekend. Right. The worst is that we were there at midnight. We're in the airport at midnight and they were like, we might take off tonight. I'm like, well, might is not good enough for me. Like, I'm not going to sleep in the airport and then find out I'm not taking off until noon the next day. So I cut my losses and went home. But yeah, you got a young kid with you. You're kind of just stuck in no man's land. You're at the mercy of the airlines. But it's good you saw a win, because I remember I went with my family to Baltimore. This was like maybe mid-2000s, like 2005, 2006 time. And we were driving down there and just decided we're going to go to the Friday night game. We had already had tickets to the Saturday game. The Friday night game was awesome. The Yankees won in like exciting fashion late. The Saturday game, I think the Yankees got two hits and lost like 4-0. So had we driven all the way down there to see like that crappy game, we would have been super pissed.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely one of those situations. But either way, the game on Saturday when the event, it was a good game. I mean, it's not like it was a bad game. I mean, yeah, we lost the game, but when Aaron Hicks steps up in the ninth inning and just hits a freaking home run, I mean, it scraped the wall. Like, I think everybody was watching that ball, and then you lose it because you can't see it because the goddamn ceiling is the same color as the baseball, and you're trying to track the ball all the way to the wall. And then it goes out. Like, we were going nuts. Like, it was Kemp saw mayhem at that point, because Kemp was at the game on Friday, at the game on.
He was with the crew. He was with the BP crew. He's being indoctrinated.
He was being passed around. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just like he was hanging out with us. Like, he was being passed around. He was like the baby awesome. That was getting passed up and down the aisle. So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And like the. I feel like the loss came fast, because I think we were all still excited for the Hicks home run, and then all of a sudden you blink and Chad Green gave up a home run to Darnell, I think it was, right? So
yeah.
But it was, man, it was
that's better than if it had just gone like 12 innings again and they lose an extra innings. I always say that, just rip the Band-Aid off fast. If they're going to lose, get it over with.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I got to do some Keith McPherson style shout outs though for some of the people that went down there, because honestly, like, we the ones that we have in Yankee Stadium, we get to talk to a bunch of people. I see a lot of people, you know, we see a lot of people over and over again. Well, there were a lot of also familiar faces down there too, and it was just a good time. I was able to spend a lot of time talking to people, so that was fun. A couple shout outs to Andrew and his girlfriend. From they drove in from, I think it was from Houston, 15 hours they drove to come to this game, and my God, he's a hell of a fan, because I feel bad for him. He's got a really bad losing streak. It's at like 11 or 12, I think, at this point.
No,
he's
really?
Never seen a win.
Never.
No, never. So we had to devise a plan on like how to like fix this. We needed to fix this plan. And, there was some ties with like, I don't know, for some reason Machado was coming up. Anyway, I'm like, you got to get an Ursula jersey or Shella jersey so that you can, like, exercise the Manny Machado demons, because he didn't sign. Like, this needs to happen. We need to figure this out. You need to go get this jersey. You need to wear it and go to a game. Not one I'm at, preferably, but one that you can win and get that win. But yeah, so we have a plan in action now to get him a win, because he deserves a win.
So has he gone to just a bunch of games in Houston since he lives in Houston, and the Yankees just seem to always struggle?
Yeah, no, I don't remember exactly where all the games were. We were talking for a while at the bar after the game, so some details are fuzzy. Did
Kemp go to the bar after
Kemp
the game?
Kemp went to the bar after the game. Kemp was playing hockey with the ice from the beer buckets after the game on the, like, the, you know, the push, whatever those things, those tables are called, where you, like, slide the shit down.
Yeah.
Who else here we got? So the Charlotte crew, the guys who are running the Charlotte chapter. Colton and Andrew Schroeder. I'm making sure I'm saying his name, because I apparently forgot it when I was talking about the Charlotte guys going down. But I'm pretty sure he missed the flight. The flight was canceled, and he went and just got a car and drove down instead. So talk about some flight issues, but these guys still going down there. And then families from. The Stovers from Virginia who now live in Florida. Michael Crow brought his entire family out there. Andrea and Tiana, we see them all the time at the Yankees in the Bronx. They came down from New York to watch this game. So, man, I'm missing a whole bunch of people, I'm sure, but it was just a blast. Brandon and Greg, who had the idea to do the roll call in the first inning, and we successfully did it. I had never done this. It was never something I would, I had thought of doing. But these guys wanted to do it, so we're like, "Why not? We'll do it." We started doing the roll call from Section 127, and every one of the Yankees acknowledged it. It was pretty awesome. So you told me.
I saw the Twitter video of that, and then you said bottom first. I was wondering if we got any TV coverage. I went back and I rewatched the bottom of the first inning because, you know, on MLB TV you can do that. You could hear you guys. I could hear you guys, but the broadcast did not mention it. I think probably, I mean, the place echoes. There's, even for a Yankees game, it wasn't full.
No, it was full. The bottom was full. Like the, well, Friday night it was super full, but the bottom was, it was full. It's,
right, but I mean, as far as like.
It echoes. There's no doubt about it. It echoes.
Well, they sectioned off the entire upper deck.
The entire upper deck is tarped.
What, 30% of the capacity of that stadium is just not used? 30, 40%?
Yeah, I think the capacity is close to 20,000 at this point. It's essentially. And I,
but if the upper deck was open, it might be 40,000.
Yeah, whatever the capacity is of that place. But yeah, it's right now a minor league ballpark, essentially, for attendance. It's a big minor league ballpark. So, yeah, it was loud. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It was loud. And we had 85-plus people, plus every other Yankee fan around us, because there were a lot of them, you know, joining in. So it got loud. But it was fun. You know, it was definitely the first time any of us had done it, because we definitely, like, screwed it up a little bit, but we powered through.
So, what's your review? What's your take on the ballpark?
All right. So, and also shout out to Marcus and Jared, who are the captains in Tampa, did a lot of the setting up down there. They have now, I think, a really good base for an awesome chapter and a good group down there. A lot of people became friends. It was just a lot of fun. Overall, a lot of fun. Awesome to meet everybody. And Larry Richards also, who's come to a bunch. You've met Larry before at spring training. Came with his family, so it's good to see him again too. The review of the ballpark. Okay. It's a shithole. There's no doubt about it. Like, to me, I think, like, the place, it reminded me of a minor league hockey arena. Like, that was the best thing I could put it on. You get the lights going on. Like, it's purple. Like, I'm really, the picture I took from my seat on Friday night and put it out on Bronx Pinstripes, it looked way too cool because it was like the purple. Like, if you have air horns, like, I need some air horns in that place. I'm like, like, if there were air horns going off in the trap, it would make a lot of sense. They have a DJ. They have, like, fly.
Yeah, the speaker, I hear from John and Susan all the time, although John didn't do the games this weekend, that the speaker system is cranked up to max volume in the truck.
Yeah, it is. And the they got, like, fly girls, like, dancing on the dugouts. Like, it's a minor league experience, essentially. So you have.
You get a little bit of the Tampa flavor. Yeah. A lot of strip clubs in Tampa.
There are strip clubs in Tampa. So the actual trap itself, like, I'll give it this. The air conditioning, very good. For me,
that's what Colleen said.
For me, and, like, bringing my son, you know, who also has a medical condition, like, there are things that were good for this game. Like, there was an aquarium there. There was a sting. Although, right. I must say,
he didn't go to baseball. He didn't go to
baseball. He went to the aquarium, and the Yankees just...
Yeah, Yankees happened to be playing in the background. His first game will be at Yankee Stadium. Yeah.
So he, to get the details right, like, Bevan did tell me that she was pregnant at one of our events. So technically, if we want to be technical,
that counts. And the Yankees won.
I think so too. But yeah, so they have, you know, all that stuff. The escalator situation is one of the more ridiculous things I've ever. And it's just like these little small details. Like, of course it is. There's like this. You can go up. Okay, you walk in, you're on this, like, you go around the main concourse, and it reminds me of, like, when you're walking around the old Yankee Stadium where it's a tube, right? It's, everything's closed off. So it feels like an arena in that sense. Like, it's an arena. It's a basketball arena, hockey arena, where you walk out, you know, into the tunnel, and you see the arena, the stadium, whatever, the field. So you're going around, and you have to, like, find the escalators, because they're not easy to find. They're next to the food courts, and you go up this long escalator. So when we went down, we tried to go down because most of the food options were downstairs. There's nowhere to go down. The escalator only goes down. There's no.
You mean only goes up?
Only goes up. There's no staircase. There was no staircase to go down.
They want to trap you once you're at your seat. They don't want you to leave.
I walked around for a solid, like, minute and a half. Couldn't find an elevator. I eventually, later in the game, found an elevator that was running. One elevator from the second floor down. One.
Really the only way to get down?
No. So by the escalator now, you have to walk past the escalator, walk outside, walk around the concrete circle way where you could, like, walk down in mobs. It's almost like a car ramp in a parking garage.
I remember the old Yankee Stadium used to have those as well.
But you physically have to go walk outside, go down this all the way up to the bottom, and then re-enter the building, essentially, to go downstairs from the second floor. So I'm like, am I going to be able to get back in? Because most places, there's no reentry. Like, that was a concern. And so then I go down and walk around, get in, go back up the escalator. The kid is back on the escalator. And I go, and then I go back to my seats. And they like guard you from going from one floor to another. Like, you got to make sure, because the floor two felt like a, it felt like a VIP floor, even though it wasn't. It was weird. So,
I mean, maybe it was back in the day when, like, maybe they designed it to be.
No, it definitely, it was, because it feels like a, either minor league hockey or like a college basketball where you go up to the second floor and it's usually like, the you know, more visiting teams and it's all like club level stuff.
Your view from your seats on Friday looked exactly like a suite view would look. It was set back a little bit and it was in the infield and it was raised. I mean, that is a suite view.
It was a suite. The suites were literally right behind me. So It was a great ticket. Like, I actually liked that vantage point because you could see everything really well. And it was, I think, good for my first time there because I could really like shit on every little nook and cranny from where I was sitting. But there's no bad seat in that place. That's the thing. Like, when you tarp off the top, the experience as far as watching a baseball game, like, not minus the fact that there's catwalks and speakers and like neon green turf, the actual proximity to the players in the field is good because you're pretty much on top of the field wherever you are.
So I have a question about those catwalks, because every time there's a broadcast, so John Flaherty was doing games this weekend and he was one of the original Devil Rays, and they apparently talked when they opened that place, like, engineers said there's no way a baseball is going to hit these catwalks. It cannot happen. And then we found out immediately, like, pop-ups hit the catwalks regularly.
Yeah.
Do these things, like, seriously look like they're hanging over the field? Like, even from the naked eye, do they look like, why the hell would somebody design it this way?
So honestly, no. When I'm there, I was surprised how high it was. And there are speakers, those black speakers that hang down off of the catwalks. Like, that's what Frazier's home run hit. Or wasn't a home run. It was an out by Echevarria. But
last year, yeah.
So that's what I thought Gardner's ball hit on Friday night. And I guess it was the catwalk hit. I lost it. I don't understand how they catch fly balls in that place. I got to tell you, it's literally the same color as a baseball. Maybe it's not as white. Maybe it's a little bit more off-white so they can see it better. But my God, it's close. The thought behind that is just, can we just, how about they just put some blue lights on it permanently, or like some kind of a light on there so that it, make it look like the sky.
Right. Or paint it like the sky.
Or
it's
shine
not
a light up there, you know? Anyway, they're pretty high. I got to say. They're pretty high. So the fly balls that go up there, those are some major league fly balls that get up there.
All right.
But they hit it all
the
time.
Well, it's like, I think of like when Jerry's World for the Dallas Cowboys, they had that massive TV
and the punts
screen in the middle, the Jumbotron, and punts were hitting it.
Yeah, so if you have a good punter and you have some good hang time, then he's probably going to hit that thing. But so, like, overall, like, the food wasn't good. I didn't really, it was whatever.
Yeah, your boiled hot dog looked disgusting.
It was a hot dog. It's a ballpark hot dog. I don't understand. That's the whole, I don't get this. I don't get everybody shitting on boiled hot dogs when they literally go to a ballpark and have a hot dog every time.
Everyone's shitting on my hamburgers over the
weekend.
Those
were bad,
so whatever.
Those were bad. But yeah, overall, like, you know, it is what it is. It's a concrete, like, dump that looks like a minor league hockey place, feels like a minor league hockey place. They need air horns. I feel like you might as well just go for it. And but the games were fun. Aaron Judge hit two home runs from my kid's first
all
game.
The games all weekend, all four games were super close. Yankees win the first two in extra innings, almost come back and win the third one. And then on Sunday, Paxton pitched well. The offense was just completely lame. We'll get into all of it. But so I was looking up as we're sitting here July 8th recording this. The All-Star break this year is a week earlier than last year, but as of the morning of July 8th this year, the Yankees are 57-31, 6.5 games up on Tampa and 9 games up on Boston. Last year on this date, Yankees were 57-29, so same number of wins, 2 fewer losses, and they were 2 games in back of Boston. So 2 completely different routes to get to essentially the same place on July 8th.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's weird, and I think it just kind of shows you too how well Boston's season was going. I mean, Boston's season was going so beautifully well for them last year that now, you know, you've seen the drastic difference. Because Yankees, honestly, like, everything besides the actual injuries and what's happened off the field, or like just with personal players and such, on the field, it's gone as well as you could possibly imagine. Like, amazingly, you know, how they've come out and
put results wise, yeah. But other than injuries, though, like the rotation has not performed up to what we thought this rotation was capable of, even with injuries. Yes, Severino's been out, but Paxton has not pitched like we were hoping James Paxton could pitch. Happ, for the most part, has struggled. Sabathia's had a weird season. Like, he went out and pitched great on Saturday, but every other start he's made on the road has been a disaster.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, results-wise, though, you're looking at how many wins they got.
They're getting wins. Scoreboard is all that matters, and they're winning baseball
games.
That's
it. That's the big thing. And, you know, early on in the season, too, the rotation was good early on, and I think did carry them for, you know, a couple weeks stretch there when things were going badly. And you saw, you know, like Tanaka pitched well. Even that was when Paxton, I think, was pitching well. So
turning it around. There was like maybe a 2-week stretch in May where we were getting some consistent starts.
Yeah. And I think they've gone back and forth. But yeah, no, there's been a large majority of inconsistency.
We kind of just glossed over Herman being a dominant force for 2 months.
That helps. When you have a guy like Herman, that's the beauty. Like early on in the season, that's what I kind of alluded to. You had a lot more consistency. And he essentially did play that Severino role of 2018, you know, just having that dominant first half, and hopefully he can continue it, because when he did come back, he looked good. So that's something we need to look at is how they can build off of this first half.
Are you a proponent of you do not like to lose going into the All-Star break? My dad, this is a big thing with my dad. Every season the Yankees lose going into the All-Star break. He says this is a bad omen for the second half. A good team, a championship caliber team, wins the last game of the first half so they don't have to sit on a loss for 4 or 5 days.
No, I don't think they care, because I think, see, here's the problem with that mindset. If you're still worried about losses, whether it's the next day or the day after, then like you're not in the right mindset anyway. Like, you're not in the championship caliber mindset, because if you lose, it's over, you move on to the next one, right? So who's stewing over it for 4 days? There should be nobody on that team.
I don't think they are. And I think what we saw this weekend, the Yankees get an extra inning win on Thursday where Chapman blows a save. He looked absolutely lost. He allowed 3 hits and 2 walks in the 9th inning on Thursday. And then the Yankees come back in extra innings. Gary Sanchez hits a ball that they're saying was like 460-something feet. Yeah. That thing went 1,000 feet, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
He knew it, too.
Like, there's some great shots of him with looking back at the dugout, just like, get out of my face.
So they get that exciting extra inning win on Thursday, and basically like a carbon copy of the game on Friday, where they win 8-4 in extra innings. Judge hits a missile over the center field fence. Gardy has a 3-run home run in extra innings. And so they get 2 exciting wins in extra innings. And then they lose a heartbreaking game on Saturday. And Sunday, I was listening to the game on my 6.5-hour drive home sitting in traffic. They sounded lethargic. They had one mini rally in the 3rd inning, and that was basically it. Every single time the Yankees were up, it was like 1-2-3, and Ryan Rucco was saying, and the Yankees go down 1-2-3 again, on to the bottom half of the inning. It's like they couldn't get anything going.
Yeah, it's...
I don't know. So it just seemed like this team really... It just seems like they're, you know, the car is idling right now, and they need a recharge.
Well, I mean, I think it's probably... True. I mean, when you have that London series and then you have, you know, a couple quick series in between that and the All-Star break, it's hard to – I got to imagine it being very, like, you know, more difficult to completely get back into the flow of things when you have those two breaks almost on top of each other. But you know, they took this team. Like, all of these games were intense. They really were. And then even Sunday, you have a 2-1 game that could switch at any point. You know, one swing of the bat. They had some guys out. I mean, they were definitely resting guys in the series as well. On Thursday was Judge out. Friday Sanchez was out. He came in, and then Sunday LeMahieu
and
Saturday was out. Glaber was out on Saturday. Or no, Glaber was in on Sunday. He played short. Didi was out on Saturday.
Yeah. So Sunday they sat LeMahieu and Glaber. Those are the two guys going to the two position players, right, other than Sanchez, who was DH and going to the All-Star game. So,
but I'm saying they imagining didn't have all
Boone
guys.
Just wants to give him right. But it makes sense. I mean, Boone just wants to give those guys a little bit of an extra rest. Everyone else is going to be sitting for 4 days. Those guys, I know they're not going to be playing full baseball game, but they're still traveling to Cleveland. They're still doing media. They're still doing a bunch of stuff.
We could look at it that way, and you could look at it in the sense that he's helping them out in a sense, or you could look at the fact that like two of his best players, the All-Stars, are not there for a team that...
Well, that's what people are pissed
about. ...in a deciding factor against the team that's closest to you in the division. So, you know, I could look at it both ways, but... you know, I prefer, and I bet they would prefer to not have that day off and to play so they can get in there. Like, I'm pretty sure those two guys would be fine with that. But yeah, whatever. It is what it is. They split. They went down there and split. You know, Tampa hasn't been the house of horrors that it was last year. They've had success there. Tanaka has pitched well there pretty much all year long. Even on Friday night, he got into the seventh inning and pitched well. But You want to see the win, but they came out. It's a four-game set. If you split a four-game set with that team, I think you're okay with it, especially on the road.
Yeah, well, we were kind of talking about going into the series. The Yankees could have buried Tampa, I think, if they had swept this series. It's unlikely to sweep four in their stadium, but they're not going to. An arena. They're not going to.
It's now an arena.
They're not going to come back against the Yankees in this division by splitting series.
Oh, no, that's not happening. But... you know, Boston made up a couple games too. I look, everybody's counting these teams out like the Yankees are running away. We're in a great spot. Yankees have been playing amazing baseball. They even as of late. Like, there's no if we're complaining about what we've seen on the field for the first half, as just a general fan base, you're a crazy lunatic. Everybody has exceeded expectations, I think, as far as team wise, minus a couple guys pitching. But you know, you look at what Boone has done with this team with all of these injuries, and if we're looking at grand scheme, looking at how they've, you know, persevered through this first half, it's like we should all be ecstatic. What is it, 7.5 games? It was 7.5 before that. So that's that. Like, going into that, if any one of us knew that if we were fully healthy and had a 6.5 game lead, we'd be all on board. If you knew that we had the injuries that we have and it was 6.5, you'd be like, what in the hell? Did everybody right. else just stop playing baseball? Or like, are they all dead? Like, what happened?
So here's the one thing from this series I don't understand. Friday, the Yankees try to avoid every big bullpen arm they can because they go from Tanaka to Cortes Jr. to David Hale. Cortes and Hale combined for 4 innings, 4 hits, and no runs. So beautiful. The plan worked out. But they end up having to use Chapman to get the final 2 outs in a win. And then you're thinking, okay, they rested all those guys on Friday. Saturday, Boone pushes Sabathia, who was pitching well, into the 7th inning. He had not pitched 7 innings since last year, June 29th against Boston. An event we were at, he pitched very well, but he didn't pitch 7 innings after that. He doesn't pitch 7 innings anymore. So why with a rested bullpen of Ottavino, Canely, and Britton, all didn't pitch the previous day, all with off days upcoming this week in the All-Star break, why would you try and push Sabathia into the 7th inning in this game in a 1-run lead?
Yeah, no, it's strange. I mean, you could see even looking on who they brought in. Like, they were not bringing in guys that were making a lot of sense. You know, when you see the people that on Friday night, even too, like you're seeing Cortes pitch at a high leverage situation. You're seeing David Hale come in and pitch in high leverage situations.
Yeah, that's what I said. They were trying to avoid every high leverage arm that they have, and just they escaped. They got the win. They stole that win by really not having to use any of those
but
guys.
But that's what's wild. Like, why are they not even doing it on that night too? So it's obvious that they were trying to avoid for whatever reason. Like, he's trying to get greedy, and we've seen Boone try to get greedy in the past and try to take advantage of certain things when he sees something good on paper. And I don't know, but when you're in that game, and you have the opportunity to take the first three, you know, to me, you take advantage of that and you bring in your number one guys and try to roll them out. But yeah, they didn't for whatever reason. And
you had 9 outs to get
CC, and then CC gave up the shot.
Yeah, you had 9 outs to get with a 1-run lead. It's perfectly set up for Ottavino, Canely, Britton.
Yeah, that's kind of how it's dialed up, right? I mean, the only other guy that you would want in there would be Betances, but he's not healthy. These guys are the ones that would be throwing.
And Chapman probably was not available because he threw back-to-back days and he threw a lot of pitches. Right. But okay, they still had Chad Green back there too, who ended up giving up the walk-off to Darno. But so you had four guys. You had 12 outs and only – you had guys capable of getting 12-plus outs and only nine outs to
they
get.
They obviously liked something with the matchup that CC was
– No, they liked Sabathia, who was pitching great. I'm not knocking Sabathia. It's still a good start. Seven innings, three runs on 89 pitches is – still a really good
start. But that's the thing. Like you also have to. I know that they were looking at CeCe and saying, "Yeah, he's good right now." But you have to also like that matchup going into because you're playing with fire at that point. I don't care how many pitches he's thrown. You're going through, another turn in the rotation in the lineup. We know the numbers on him when he starts seeing guys over repeated in a game. So you're looking at that and you're like, okay, I'm ready to go. Like he should. We have all these guys rested. They obviously liked the matchup. With CeCe still in that inning, but we were all scratching our heads why CeCe was still in the game when he came back out.
Yeah, and both Sabathia and Happ looked pretty good in this series, and they were the guys pitching on extended rest because they didn't pitch over the London weekend. So Sabathia was on 12 days rest and Happ was on 11 days rest, and it both looked like it did them well.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the last time that Boone had the opportunity to use one of those guys on Sunday in London, but really, I think, wanted to take advantage of, the extra days off. Because I think when you have veteran guys like that, it just doesn't affect you in a negative way. It's just anytime you can get more time off, that's a good thing. Maybe a younger guy, it can affect his rhythm and the way he does things and his how he goes about his situation. But older guys who just know how to get out there and pitch, doesn't matter when they, how many times in between, I think it definitely helps the body.
And Paxton came back on Sunday. He was on his normal rest. He was the guy who they decided they lined up the rotation to get two starts for Paxton before the break. Again, first inning problems, first four batters, two runs allowed. But it was nothing after that. It was a really dominant performance when you look at batters five of the game through the rest of the game. He pitched six innings and struck out 11 guys. So it was a great performance after that. It's just how do they fix this problem he seems to have in the first inning? It's always early in the game, too. He comes out and he doesn't have the strike zone. He leaves some fastballs up. He either walks a guy or it gives up hard hits. It's so predictable at this point.
We saw this with, was it with Herman that would come out and just...
Last year. It's a classic starter problem. This is like the most classic starting pitcher problem.
I don't know what it is. We've tried to figure these things out. You can't... When you're looking at it from a fan's point of view, it seems so easy, right? Like just go out there and get extra warm-up pitches. Go see Carlos Beltran and talk to him about getting through the first inning. Talk to Beltran about the mindset. I don't know. To me, it's like he's not fully warmed up and ready to go. It's like it takes him a little bit longer to get into the game. So. If that's what it is, like get out there earlier and change that routine up a little bit so that you have your legs underneath you and you are more prepared for that first inning. I don't know what it is, but if that's it, that should be relatively simple fix. I think at some point it becomes a very much of a mental issue as well that you have to get past that that first inning, knowing that you're walking into a game where you struggle in the first inning. Like at some point when it's happened more than a few times, you start thinking about it. I think it's his job and the catcher's job to get through.
It totally bit them because the offense did nothing. They only scored one run. So those two runs were the deciding runs in the game. Like I was saying earlier, the team looks lethargic. So Gary Sanchez is going through a slump right now. He's six for his last 49. In that time frame, in 12 games, his batting average has dropped from .274 to .245. He still hit a game-deciding home run on Thursday. I think he's just going through a slump. Something I'm a little bit more concerned about is Encarnacion since joining the Yankees. He's hitting .131, .221, .361 with eight hits. So he has eight hits and four of them are home runs. He's basically hit four home runs and that's it for the Yankees. Otherwise, he's been bad.
Yeah, and missed a couple plays on defense too, playing first base. But, it seems like there's a guy every year now that we can just go sit on and call Chris Carter. I'm getting sick of it because I don't want that name to keep popping up because it just brings back bad memories. But the comparisons are not that far off when you're looking at home run or bust, swinging at bad pitches. And you expect when you see Aaron Cardoso, because he was one of the leaders of seeing pitches when he came over too. Like the guy sees a ton of pitches. He has good at bats. And some of these at-bats to me just aren't, don't look like a normal Encarnacion at-bat. So I don't know what it is with him. Maybe, unfortunately, we just can't, he came over in the middle of a slump as well. And I think that's what we're seeing. He's got enough of a track record that I'm not worried about it. And yep. It's not like he's physically falling off a cliff by any means. Like, the guy doesn't look any different than he's looked in the past however many years. Looks like the same guy to me. I think he's just in the middle of a slump. So I think he will come around. I'm not too worried about that one.
You stole exactly what I was going to say. This is not Chris Carter, where you look back and you say, okay, other than the fact that he hit 40 home runs a couple years, what did Chris Carter do? He was a bad baseball player. Yeah. Encarnacion has been one of the best power hitters in baseball since 2012. I mean, that's just a fact.
Right. Oh, no doubt about it. That's why I fully expect him to get on a tear at some point, and we're going to see that parrot walking around the bases quite often.
And it's nice that they, even though he's slumping, they have Encarnacion to plug into first base while Voit is on the injured list. Because otherwise it would be
LeMahieu.
I mean, I guess they'd do LeMahieu with Urshela at third base. But still, it's nice to have. I love how this infield is set up right now. So with guys who can play multiple positions. Mm-hmm. I think what we're seeing with Urshela is that he's still providing them good at-bats in a more limited role. Which was, I think, the big question with him is like, oh, is he going to turn back into the pumpkin that he was prior to this when he's not playing every day? Where maybe he's like, it's almost like he was having a magical season and it was going to end as soon as he wasn't in there every day. But that hasn't happened. He's still giving them good at bats. He's still providing them value in a, I don't want to say part time role, but like,
it seems like everybody's a plug and play guy right now. So I mean, there are, you know, those guys that are plugging and playing in different positions, but they're there every night. Urshela is a valuable spot here. And yeah, I agree with the situation with the infield. Like, they're able to rotate it so well now that all of these guys are playing all over. And this is something that I've talked about in the past, but I think that you're seeing guys that that can play multiple positions now. It's just not as big of a deal as it used to be because of all of the shifting and because of all of the, you know, the position changes that they're making. And, you know, specifically with our infield, having Gleyber, you know, going from shortstop to second base and getting a lot of time at both of those, having LeMahieu practically playing an elite defensive, defensive ability at multiple positions. Urshela is a third baseman, but you see them able to go pretty seamlessly, you know, throughout. And I think these guys are getting a lot more reps now at different spots on the infield just because they're moving all over for the shifting as well. So I think that just takes away from, you know, some of the problems that there used to be when you have guys moving from position to position. I just don't think it's the case as much anymore.
No, I think that's just how it's like a mindset shift and a plan shift.
Well, it's also just different for baseball. I think they get different reps.
Yeah, all of baseball. Yeah,
because before, even when you're looking at the reps that they're getting, they're in one spot getting those reps. Like, they'll go within that position, but they're only staying on one side of the field. Now it's just not the case anymore.
Here's a weird thing that I was actually, here's another shout out, Coley Harvey, who I found this stat from. So Judge has not pulled a home run this year. He's hit 9 home runs, 3 to center field and 6 to right field. The last time he pulled a home run in the regular season anyway was July 21st of last year. He did hit 2 to left field in the playoffs of last year against one against the A's in the wild card game and one against Boston in the ALDS. So why? What's going on? Is this just a weird sort of, he's been injured, limited time, he's only hit 9 home runs. He's been going to right field. This is his approach, and this is where pitchers are pitching him. They don't want to challenge him inside, so he's taking the ball to right field. It doesn't matter. He can hit the ball out to right field, no problem. Yeah. And frankly, it's still a home run. It still counts the same whether it scrapes the right field wall or it goes into the third deck like Gary Sanchez in left field. It still counts the same.
I mean, I think this is a good thing, honestly, because it kind of shows you how he has adjusted his swing that he can take that outside pitch and do damage with it and to it, because I think that he is definitely getting pitched more outside. You're not seeing him get challenged as much inside for him to, you know, turn on the ball and pull it down the line.
Can he turn on the ball, though?
There's no doubt. The balls that are going into center field, like, if we're all concerned about the balls that are not going into left field, he's hitting missiles to center field. Like, when you're taught how to hit a baseball, you're taught how to hit up the middle and barrel up that ball up the middle, and that's what he's doing. Like, the balls that are going to right field, that's a testament to Aaron Judge having his swing flat through the zone with extending that the life of the strike zone longer so that when he's missing or he's late or he's just trying to poke it out to right, he's still able to do that because the bat's in the right place. So it's a very good thing when you see a power hitter that has the ability to go to right field with consistency, because that's his mindset. There's no doubt about it. It's been since he came back up with a fixed swing. Like, he's gone to right more often. And when you see him going to right, that just means you're on the ball better. And I think when you're, you know, if you're pulling the ball to left field, you're definitely out in front of it. And he, like, the whole mindset of his new swing ever since he came back up was staying back and keeping the swing and the bat path in the zone longer, because then you can get to the outside pitch. And even if you're late, you can get a ball out. So I think this is all by design.
The home run he hit in extra innings on Friday, yes, was an absolute P to center field. The thing almost took off the pitcher's head and it went over the center field wall. I just think the cynical approach to this is that maybe the oblique is not fully healthy yet, and he is sort of afraid to just open it up and try and pull the ball.
So hold on.
Trying to stay close and stay a little bit more simple and hit the ball up the middle, hit the ball to right field. Or maybe this is just his approach to stay healthy. Is that so far-fetched?
Yes, it is. It's completely, utterly ridiculous. Because what you're doing right now is you're telling me that he doesn't have to swing as hard or have the torque to hit a ball to center field that he does the left field. It's a timing thing. If he's out in front of the ball and he doesn't have to swing harder, he can just time the pitch differently, and or if it's the location of the pitch, there's no extra or more effort in the swing when you're going to right field, to center field, to left field. It's timing of the bat to make contact with the ball. It's not like he's swinging harder or faster. Like, I don't think that's the case. I think it's the approach, the way that he's approaching the at bat, the way that he's approaching these pitches, the way the pitchers are approaching him. He's still getting that unbelievable torque through the oblique that's still having the same effect on that oblique, whether he's going to center field. Because you have to, when you hit that ball to center field like that, I mean, it's literally like, I don't even know how small of a nanosecond or whatever the hell it is to make that ball go, you know, 15 feet to the left, and then all of a sudden you pulled the ball. It's just an approach thing. That's like saying Didi can't hit a ball he has to overexert in order to hit a pitch.
He can't.
Like,
he's never hit a home run to left field.
So yeah, like, no, it's an approach thing. It's an approach thing. It's the way that he's swinging.
I agree. It's an approach thing. He wants the ball to travel. He wants to walk a lot more. He wants to see the ball. Yes. He wants to have deep. He always has deep at bats.
Yes.
Yes, I agree.
And when you're seeing the ball, that's the other thing. Part of his swing and those mechanics and what he was taught was when you can stay back longer and when you can have that bat flat through the zone longer, you have more time to recognize the pitch. And I think that's also what we're seeing. We're seeing unbelievable ability for him to recognize a ball that he's able to make contact with. And I think the majority of those balls that he's had trouble with in the past have been on the outside part of the plate. And now he's making contact with a lot of them.
What about this? The judges' chambers are in right field. He wants to hit the ball to right field because all of his fans are sitting in right field.
Not a bad thought. I mean, he's a people pleaser. Like, the guy likes to make the fans happy. So I could see that too. Again, part of the approach.
Home runs... Home runs to right field are not as sexy as they are to left field. Home runs pulled are sexier than home
majestic.
Runs hit to the opposite field.
They usually go higher in the air, and you see these unbelievably, like, Gary Sanchez has been king of hitting these, like, massive, like, just majestic home runs.
That thing on Thursday night was orgasmic.
Yeah. So Judge takes the workman's approach and just gets the ball over the damn fence.
Right, and it still counts the
still
same.
Counts exactly.
If no one's on base, it's one run regardless.
Yeah. Oh, so. Don't worry. He's going to start. He'll pull a couple of balls that will be massive. He will.
Uh-huh.
He
and
will
as soon
be
as he does,
hits
as soon as he does, all is well again.
Yeah. He will hit a
6 of his 9 home runs have been at key spots. They've either 6 of his 9 home runs have given the Yankees the lead. So he's hitting home runs in timely spots. He still plays a tremendous right field, even if he's not 100% healthy. Because we had that weird quote where he's talking about he's never going to be 100% this season with the oblique. And then he comes back earlier than schedule, and he's back for the London games, and it's like, oh, wow, he healed faster. I don't know. Maybe he's only 85%. I have no clue.
I think he's 100%.
We're probably never going to find...
I think he's 100%.
Oh, regardless, he's even if he's not though, he's still playing well.
Yeah. This is like a zero concern. Zero. To me, it's a good thing because when you have a big guy like this who can go the other way, that just leads you to believe that mechanically he's really sound. And later in his career, like if you could do that, if you could go bat the ball the other way, like as long as you could stay on the field, he's going to have a long career.
I saw a thread from James Smythe, who does Yes Network research, over the weekend on Twitter about DJ LeMahieu and win probability added. So, are you familiar much with win probability added?
Yeah, we've talked about it, on the show in the past, and yes, I've.
I think it's. I mean, it's certainly a very in the weeds thing because every at bat, every play adds or subtracts from your WPA. But the fact of the matter is DJ LeMahieu ranks second in the American League behind Mike Trout.
That's pretty good.
I don't know if you've heard of Mike Trout, but he's good at baseball.
Yeah, he's okay. He's he's a decent guy. I think we just signed a guy, Jason Dominguez, or Jason as you call him, just gonna be the next Mike Trout. So yeah, we got one coming up.
But LeMahieu ranks second in the American League behind Trout, and I think that sort of supports the mailbag question we had a couple
MVP,
shows ago
MVP.
About DJLM for MVP.
I think so. I think that's a. I think that is a. I think it's. A, I mean, it's a good. That's one of those stats. So I think you can look at a lot of those advanced metrics too, and see more of like the value card than you can when you're looking at the standard, batting averages and the standard statistics. You can definitely see some underlying where the value is. And value is such a word that gets twisted in baseball because is MVP a value card or is it an award for the best player in baseball? Well, if you look at history, it's the best player in baseball who gets the MVP. That's just where the writers have always gone. That's how Alex Rodriguez can win an MVP playing for a terrible Texas Rangers team. So you have... But I think now when you're looking at these advanced metrics, you can really see the value of a guy compared to, what he is, with the rest of his team and the rest of the league. I think it's valuable for sure right there. And it speaks to what we all kind of understand and see with our eyes, right? Like LeMahieu has come up in very big situations. His numbers with runners in scoring position are unbelievable. 462, 78 at bats. Like that's a lot. That's a good sample size to see what a guy has done with crunch numbers. I saw, you have it in here. I saw someone tweet the Miguel Andujar stat who led last year with hits, the Yankees in hits with runners in score position, had 37, and LeMahieu has 36 in the first half. That's crazy.
Yeah. Last year, Miggy had 37 hits and 126 at-bats with runners in scoring position, .294 batting average, and we were all like, wow, yeah. Finally they have a guy who can make contact with runners in scoring position. This is fantastic. And then, boom, here comes LeMahieu in half a season, almost as many hits, hitting .462 with runners in scoring position. Win probability added, I kind of like as a metric. I like it for pitchers, too, which I'll get to in a second. But everything counts. A flyout in the second inning takes a couple percentage points off. A base hit up the middle in the seventh inning adds a couple percentage points. So everything counts. Obviously, more things count more or count less depending on the situation. I read a article on Fangraphs. This might have been last year over the offseason that they were trying to say that a better way to look at pitchers' wins loss is their win probability added. So the pitcher who adds the most percentage points to WPA in the game gets the win. Most of the time, that's going to be the starter because he's pitching longer. But just because a starter goes seven innings, but the team doesn't score anything for him, if he pitches seven shutout innings and then the team scores a run in the eighth, that pitcher who pitched seven innings did more to win the game than the guy who just came in the eighth inning. And they used Jacob deGrom last year, who won the Cy Young, but he had like a .500 record. And his record would have been something like 17-2 last year with win probability added.
Well, yeah, and you look at, didn't Chapman get the win after he blew the save? He got the win
and
in the box.
He pitched
score,
terribly. Right?
Yeah, yeah, so like sometimes the pitcher wins after if a starting pitcher is no longer in play and he doesn't have a win, a lead after five innings, it can get weird, especially if late game things get weird. And the fact that Chapman got a win right there makes no sense to me. But yeah, so it's one of those things. But yeah, no, I think there's value for this for sure when you're looking at the overall value aspect. I think it tells more of a broad stroke of what's happening with a player's season.
We got the All-Star game this week. Glaber got added. He replaces Brandon Lau. Joins Mickey Mantle and Joe DiMaggio as the only players under 23 to make two All-Star teams, which is pretty freaking ridiculous. You always forget Glaber's just so young still. Sabathia is going to be honored in Cleveland. So, and Sonny Gray is going to be in Cleveland. He's a National League All-Star. I believe we joked about this as soon as he was traded. So I love the All-Star game. It's still my favorite of any sport All-Star game. Herman Derby, I think the week is fun. It's nice, like midpoint relax. You just throw it on and just see what's going on. And I'm looking forward to see what Cleveland does for Sabathia. I know they kind of did a video montage to him when the Yankees were in Cleveland a couple weeks ago. But he's going to be there. It's where he started his career. So be curious to see what they do.
Yeah, no, I think it's cool that Manfred, you know, invited him out there as an honorary guest to be in. I think it's, you know, that's just something that baseball has always done really well, and they've honored guys who have been around for a while, and they just make note. I think they do that better than any sport. They acknowledge, you know, especially the lifetime achievement award type guys, or you know, even if you're not. A shoe-in for a Hall of Fame. When you have a situation like this where All-Star game in the place where a guy's retiring, has had a very good career, started there, like they do the right thing more often than not, I think, in situations like this. You know, I'm glad Glaber got on it. He deserves it. There's no doubt about it. Like, the kid absolutely deserves being on there. I think there's a bunch of people in that position that were that had some good numbers, but he certainly deserves it. And the whole Sonny Gray thing, like, whatever. First of all, he's not even having that great of a season. Let's all make that very clear. Like, he's on this team pretty much from default. Like, there's not that many dominant pitchers in the National League that deserve an All-Star ballot.
I think he's leading the NL, or was at one point in FIP.
Whatever. Look, this proves is that he is just mentally inferior, and it's everything that we thought he was. He's got the ability to do it, but if he's in a situation like the New York Yankees, he can't do it because he's soft. And you know, he had to be with.
If anything, this justifies the Yankees.
I agree. Because he couldn't handle it, and he's out in Cincinnati, and he's like, he's okay. He's not great, but he's okay. Whatever.
You got to be better than okay to be an All-Star. Even if you're a reserve player, even if you're added because of injuries, I think he replaced Max Scherzer, who pitched over the weekend. So Scherzer wasn't going to be able to pitch in the game. So I think that's how Sonny Gray got added. But you still got to be having a good season to be added to the All-Star team.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put an asterisk on it because he didn't make the real All-Star team. You know.
Oh, so you're putting an asterisk on Glaber?
Yeah, I kind of don't like it, to tell you the truth, a little bit. I'll forget about that. I'll forget about Glaber. And just remember,
well, in
him
20
as an
years, when you're looking back at his baseball, 20 years when you're looking back at his baseball reference page, and you see the AS next to it in the awards,
I'll know.
Well,
I'll remember. Maybe you'll know. Every single Yankee fan will remember that he got added late, and that he's a little bitch because he went into Cincinnati, and again he got reconnected with his coddler, his pitching coach from Vanderbilt. So, you know, there's he's got his own little personal yes man there now. So it's fine.
And the Yankees also had Devi Garcia.
I just don't want to talk about him anymore.
Yeah, we can't escape him. Devi Garcia pitched in the Futures game, and he looked damn good. 1-2-3 first inning, started the game. He struck out the first batter on a 96-mile-an-hour heater on the black on the outside corner, and he got a mercy from Harold Reynolds, who I know you're a fan.
Oh, you like Harold Reynolds now, right?
No, I don't like Harold Reynolds. I think he's a joke. But he gave him a mercy, and you know that's when Harold Reynolds gets excited, when he busts out the mercy call.
There were some good stories going on with Harold Reynolds and Griffey Jr. too. Did you hear this? The Griffey where he had broken his arm or his hand, and there was talking about, I think, the 95 team, who I hate, but that he was not with the team. He was like at home, and there was a beanball going on, like guys were hitting, and Griffey drove to the stadium, sat out in the bullpen in case there was a fight so that he could be there to be in the fight. Like, some good stories, man. Like, I think if you're looking for some good baseball stories, Harold Reynolds is probably a really good guy to go to.
Okay.
And that's why I like him on air, because I think he brings that element to the broadcast. And he just doesn't give a shit. He just kind of talks as a baseball guy. That's why I appreciate him. Anyway. Devi Garcia.
Look, I think it's Devi. I've heard it Devi.
They were calling him Devi the entire Futures game. Looked awesome. Like, so good. That strikeout, there was an absolute, the mercy was well suited for that pitch, man, because that thing was a freaking rope. And it just painted the black. It was a beautiful pitch, and it was right after you know, a disgusting curveball. The breaking ball that's just like late action, like you see it go, whoop, boop. It's just a not slow by any means, but a lot of movement on it. Really good stuff. He looks phenomenal.
And he's promoted to Scranton, so he's now flying. Gone up from single A. Single A started the season, went to Trenton, dominated Trenton. Now he's in Scranton. Kind of supports the theory we could see him later this season. I don't know if we see him out of the bullpen, if we see him as like an opener, or what capacity we see him in, because of course there's going to be innings talk with him later in the year. But he's on his trajectory is he'll be in the majors soon.
Well, yeah, it's off the charts at this point because he's moved up so fast. But the fact that they've gotten him into AAA now, they're like, okay, you we saw you in Trenton in AA against that competition. And supposedly that's one of the biggest jumps going from single A to AA, because you have the AA guys. It's just a very big difference. Whereas AAA, you know, you have some journeyman guys that have been there for a long time.
That can be tough too, though, especially for a young pitcher facing guys who have maybe spent, you know, a handful of, maybe they've gotten like 300 at bats, 400 at bats in the major leagues. Like, yeah, it's just a different mentality when there's like a veteran guy you're facing rather than just like raw talent guys.
So this guy, this Garcia, looks like he's not fazed by anything. Like he looks like he has the makeup of a guy that has he just looks like he has a ton of confidence, a ton of ability in himself. So I'm not really worried about that. I feel like he's got that factor where he's, you know, no stage is going to be too big for him. It just, for whatever reason, when I've seen him pitch in like small doses and just highlights and stuff like that, his demeanor and to him talking afterwards, he just seems like he gets it. So I'm sure he's battled adversity throughout. He's not a big guy. He's like, what, 5'8", buck 60? Like, you could blow on
kind of like a low, kind of like a Johnny Lasagna type.
He's
body.
Shorter though. I mean, he's small. But he's got that wit, man, and he's able to he's got that a little bit of a deception in his delivery as well, where he kind of steps towards the visitor's dugout and then like snaps back into play. So the ball is hidden for like half a second, and so it'll be interesting to see. Here's my question, right? I'm curious as to what you think about this. When we're looking at a guy who's flown up so much, and the comparisons are so relevant because of like the body type. I mean, they're exactly the same, essentially. When you're looking at a guy like Stroman, or you're looking at a guy like Garcia, who's now in AAA, now he's right there. We're not talking about a prospect who's been down for, you know, is in single A and that has potential. Like, this guy's ready to contribute now. A lot of people are saying that he's being showcased, that this is potentially a trade chip now, and they're going to do it. But to me, when you're getting this close, like now you're seeing value that's potential in the major leagues right now. So why would we give up a guy that's so close for another guy that, you know, we've seen flash, but hasn't been consistent?
Well, I mean, it is the question, are you willing to give up Garcia in a Marcus Stroman trade? I think the answer should be probably yes, because Garcia has come up so fast. Like you said, this isn't like a prospect who's been in the works for many, many years. He has flown up the charts in the last two months.
But for a pitcher, I don't want to see a guy who's been in the system for years. Like, if I see a pitcher that's coming through the organization and dominating through, like, to me, that's much better than a guy that's been sitting around and dicking around in double A or single A for a while.
It's not like Stroman, though, is like a 38-year-old you're trading for, and
not.
It's only 1 year you've got, and then that's it. Stroman, in theory, should be in your rotation for many years after this.
But you've also gotten a guy that you've seen for a while. Like, Garcia's been with the organization. They brought him up. They know him. They know all the pitches that he's thrown. They've seen, like, they've brought him up through the organization, whereas Stroman has the injury concern. Yes, you've seen him pitch on a big stage, but Garcia does look like a very similar type pitcher. Like, I don't love giving up Garcia for Stroman.
This is going to be a cop-out. Whatever Brian Cashman does, I will trust, because we've seen him trade away pitchers, Justice Sheffield, James Caprellian, and it's the right call to trade them away.
Right. So, and I agree to that, because I think both of those pitchers were flawed. I don't see that same flaw in...
How do you know? All we see is like these crazy-ass strikeout numbers, like 22 strikeouts in 10 innings
or something.
I'm looking
at different
nuts.
Things. Like, the production has to be there, obviously, to move through the system. But with both of Caprellian and Sheffield, like, I saw other things. Like, I saw mechanical issues with Caprellian. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be healthy. And then Sheffield, like, honestly, I just didn't believe that he was going to be a dominant guy. I didn't see the stuff. Garcia has the stuff. Like, yeah, you see the numbers, but when you look at the actual pitches and what he's done, and you see the demeanor of the kid and just the way that he throws, like, it's just different. It just looks and feels different. So when I'm seeing a guy like that, I am a lot more hesitant to give it up, because to me, that kid could be, like, he could pop and be a, you know, a superstar type guy. And yes, he's a smaller guy, so they're worried about potential load issues with him, but he hasn't shown it yet. So at this point, you know, we're just saying that because of body type. Pedro,
he's now the number MLB Pipeline ranks him the fourth prospect in the Yankee system right now. So you'd probably be giving up if like the Blue Jays for Marcus Stroman are looking for a pitcher and a hitter, it's probably like Clint Frazier and Garcia.
See, those numbers though, I mean, how often are they updated? Because it's
I think they update them mid-season. I think they update them early season, mid-season, and then in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean,
because they updated them for the international signings, Dominguez. Isn't he now the Yankees' number one prospect?
Well, no, we had them. He had them up there. Yeah, for as far as the rankings, he was the top Yankees guy. But I mean, Garcia's got to be way up there after watching what he's done and moved up so fast and dominated.
He wasn't in the top 10. He wasn't in the top 10 at the beginning of the season. Now he's number four in the system.
That's the point. Like, he's going up so fast. Like, the guy has overcome. He has control issues. That's been his big thing in the past. He still has them to some extent, but he's definitely cleaned that up a lot. And to the fact that he's improved, I think, that much with some of the concerns, like, you're flying up there. So whether you're number four or number one, like, you're up there, like, way up there as far as and for a guy that contribute right now and you know, into the future, but ready right now, he's probably the top guy.
I just don't. I mean, Marcus Stroman, if you trade for Marcus Stroman this year, your hopes is that he's the difference between winning a World Series and not winning a World Series. I don't think Garcia is the difference between winning a World Series and not winning a World Series in 2019.
I think he could be.
I'm not.
I'm not exaggerating.
He hasn't even pitched in AAA yet.
You're right. But at the same time, I'm looking at a guy that's dominated all the way through. If he is the guy, let's just get this. I'm not.
Dominating AA is not dominating the majors.
No shit. But when I'm seeing a guy, you're saying that he has no chance to do that. If he comes up...
I didn't say no chance. I didn't say
if
no
he's
chance.
Coming, you hate short people. If he's coming up...
Marcus Stroman's short.
Yeah, for whatever reason. I don't know. Maybe because he's from New York. You're giving him a pass. But he... Marcus Stroman has shown good things. But he's also shown a lot of inconsistency. And he's also shown that he's been hurt in the major leagues. We've seen this. Like, the guy's been down. Garcia has the ability and the raw talent where if he could come up and we could see some, he could absolutely play a contributing role, whether it's a reliever or starter or whatnot. It's hard for me to get rid of a guy that's so hot right now. That's the problem. When I see a guy that's peaking, like currently, like this guy is on a freaking moon mission, a rocket ship to the major leagues right now. It's really hard for me to say trade him. Like, you can't get much higher and higher than a guy like this.
Don't just give him away.
I don't trade trust
if you're
Marcus
trading
Stroman.
Him. Okay, that's a different question.
It's the though. Same question because that's the guy who we're talking about.
Would you trade him for a pitcher that could help you win a World
that's
Series?
That's the
this
problem.
Year?
That guy doesn't exist. That's so clear.
We don't know. We thought it was going to be Sonny Gray in 2017, and it wasn't.
Right. So I will take my chances sometimes when I'm looking at a guy that's a possible, I'm giving up the farm system and I'm giving up the potential for a guy like this who's flying up. And I understand there's still time for him to go off the rails and not be the guy that we all hope he could be. And I'm not saying he's going to be the savior, but do I think he could contribute and help the team if he were to get up and show some of this type of stuff? Hell yes. You pair him with a Domingo Germán for a start every time? Hell yes, that's a nice little combination. Like, the fact that they would have the flexibility, we saw what Boston did last year with their starting pitchers. They put them in the bullpen, and they were the games became shorter for the pitchers, but they were able to extend the bullpen because they have guys that were not in the bullpen. So you have a guy like Devi Garcia who's able to show that he can play at the major league level. You're getting a guy who has the starter ability but could come in relief. You're adding another element that gives them more flexibility and what we think is going to need, they're going to need some of that flexibility come end of the season, come playoff time, right? A guy like that could be a major contributing factor. I'm just saying I don't think they're going to contribute. They're going to need him for like seven innings starts, but he could be a dominant factor 2 to 3 innings here, you know, in between, you know, in between potential starts or being a guy that comes in and being a fire extinguisher. There's a lot of ability there, and that's what I'm seeing.
All right, let's move on to mailbags. The first one from Brian actually kind of goes with trades. Do you think the fact the Yankees haven't called up Frazier, even though they could use a right-handed outfielder bat and Tauchman is still here, means Clint is definitely getting traded? What would be the benefit of keeping him in the minors if they intend on trading him? So Frazier, since being sent back down to Scranton, is hitting 229 in about 60 at-bats. Is there a benefit? Like, what is the – if they want to trade – if the theories are true and the Yankees don't like Clint Frazier's attitude and he's on his way out the door and he is their main trade chip, what is the purpose of keeping him in the minor leagues?
Well, every day at-bats, and the fact that he can't get the everyday
– but at this point, I don't think he can show any more or any less – to his value is not going to change barring injury, which he's just as likely to get injured playing in Scranton as he is playing in New York.
You don't have to talk about value either. Like, it's not just a value thing. It's a him just getting those reps and staying at a time. Even if you want him on their major league level at some point, like him getting those consistent at-bats, I think is important for his development and just to him as a player to stay consistent with that. Whereas Mike,
but with Stanton out, couldn't he get pretty consistent at-bats?
Yeah, probably. I think the defense is an issue. I think that Mike Tauchman comes up.
That's what they're hiding behind.
It's not hiding. I mean, you saw him screw up a ball in AAA. Like, the guy's still making mistakes. Like,
hey, he lost it in the sun. Okay,
and Tauchman's coming up.
The sun was setting behind him.
Tauchman is coming up and has hit like since he's been up and plays a good defense. So he can play all three outfield positions, so it gives them more flexibility, and I think that they value the defense right now more than the offense. And look, Boone came out and acknowledged that he addressed it, the concerns about the attitude, and with him and even they put Wade in the conversation too, because when Valera got a call up, they're like, well, Tyler Wade's hitting 298 in AAA, he can play all positions. Why is he not got? And so they were wondering if that was the Yankees saying, hey, you know, in the beginning when you didn't make the team out of spring training and you kind of balked publicly, is this part of that? Do you feel like there's an attitude thing? And they've said that there has been no decision to keep a guy or bring him up that has anything based on their attitude. They like the attitude. They think they're all in a good place. So that was their public stance on that.
I think with Valera, they didn't want to waste options on other guys for one game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's been up and down with like three teams now. I mean, he's been playing well.
And he has been playing well with Scranton, but I think that they feel more comfortable where if they in the future run out of options with a guy, they run out of options with Valera, they're more comfortable doing that than running out of options with somebody else.
Maybe. But Valera is an interesting player because you look at the numbers that he's done in AAA, like the kid has apparently stopped hitting a lot of ground balls and has just changed like launch angle since he's come over to the Yankees, because he's bounced around a little bit and he's being productive. He made a defensive blunder on Sunday, but the kid can apparently hit. So we'll see what. But yeah, I mean, like, this was a he's not the guy. Like, but if you're looking at depth chart as far as Tyler Wade and things like that, like Estrada's ahead of Wade right now. You could argue that Valera's ahead of him. I think if there was a longer
term, people
were
saying, well, why didn't Tyler Estrada get called back up, because he played so well for them? And I think it's an options thing. I think that's why they didn't call Estrada up for one game.
Yeah, but I mean, once you're up, you're up. You can get some back and down, up and down, no matter how many times. You have the options aren't within a season. They're, if you come up, you're up. Then they reset. Like, you can get tossed up and down on a given year, and it doesn't affect your options. If you go up one time, you can be passed back and forth.
I thought it's six. Do I not understand how options work?
Yeah, I think we need to relook at it.
God damn it. Next question is from Robert. Last year, Cashman acquired Hap, Britton, and Lynn to improve pitching depth. I remember the narrative being there wasn't an ace-type starter available, so they decided to bolster the pitching depth with these three moves. Do you think we see something like this happen again, since there might not be a number one guy we're all looking for?
Again, that kind of goes to the point where there's no number one guy. I think there's different things that can happen, and that's why I'm looking at a guy who's getting thrown through a minor league system as a potential option But that's the problem is that there is no number one guy, right? Like, are we all kind of agree? Because I think if everybody's looking at the big names, if you're still looking for Max Scherzer, you should just get off that train because I don't think it's ever happening. They're not gonna trade him at this point. And if you are gonna trade him, you're giving up a ton. I just don't see it happening. There's no number one guy. Like, is Bumgarner's not the number one guy? So there's a lot of different options.
Well, no, he's the number one name, but he's not pitching like a number one Bumgarner anymore.
No. So to me, that opens the door for a lot of different possibilities.
Yeah, and I think last year, everyone said, oh, the Yankees did tremendously at the trade deadline. And the Red Sox at the same trade deadline acquired Nathan Eovaldi. And everyone mocked that. Like, oh, Nathan Eovaldi's going to be their pitching addition. They don't need another starter. And then Nathan Eovaldi pitched like a number one pitcher for them in the playoffs.
So the model that Boston created last year, essentially, with the starters going into the bullpen and the bullpen really just carrying the game, their playoff run, even though it wasn't their bullpen, it was a lot of their starting pitchers, is an interesting model to look at. Because if the Yankees can continue to play and this lead stays similar to where it is, like, do they really need that number one type guy to give up? Like, even if he's not, that true number one guy doesn't really exist on the market. Now, can you assemble your pitching staff in a different way that can be as effective or more effective with putting guys together rather than relying on that number one guy to go out there and pitch in a 7-game series twice and dominate? I don't think that guy exists right now. Unless he comes from within.
Well, and they also don't know if in a playoff series, James Paxton could pitch twice and completely
shut
out
the team.
That's
what I mean. It could come within the organization. So,
but they need to add, I think they need to add a starter. They need to add a good starter. Maybe it's not a number one guy, but they need to add a good starter.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough to see who that guy is right now when you're looking at the options.
Yeah, it's tough to see it while sitting at home.
No, it's tough to see, I think, for everybody. I think it's not an easy... when you're looking at who these guys are and then what you're giving up, because that's got to be the real thing, like who you're giving up and what you're giving up and what is helping us at a major league level right now. Because if you're giving up a good starter, if you're getting a good starter and, you know, the cost is Clint Frazier, who very well could be a very good, if not more than good, major league bat. I mean, I think he's proved that he can be very, very high above average bat in the major league level. Are you giving up that guy for like, of Lance Lynn type? Because mediocre type of players that you're looking at. If you're not going for those number one names and you're trying to get like a guy, like to me, the other guys would be trade candidates. Like, go to Arizona, pick some pitchers off of their team and try to get them. Like Robbie Ray, to me, is also a guy that I've said this in the past, like a guy that adds flexibility, doesn't go necessarily, throw a ton of innings and go deep, but he's a guy that you could plug in.
They got 3 weeks to figure it out. Like, the trade deadline is right around the
corner.
But
for a guy like Robbie Ray, like, are you giving up Clint Frazier? Possibly.
Yeah, I think any team that comes to the Yankees or any team the Yankees go to, Clint Frazier's in the discussion.
Oh, yeah.
Unless a team is like, we are so far away from contending, we don't want a guy who's ready for the major leagues now. We want a boatload of guys who are going to be ready for the majors in 3 years.
Yeah, but I mean, Clint Frazier is still going to be there 3 years from now, and I mean, not
does the fact that they signed Gesson mean that Florial is now a guy they're more comfortable giving away?
I mean, possibly. It's. I think when you're looking now at the, I mean, he's 16 years old, so it's impossible for me to say that. But there's so many things that could happen, and you could still look at Jesus Montero, who was like the up and coming, the savior of the organization for however long, and then just fizzled. So. It's impossible to say what they are at this point at 16. So not necessarily. But the fact that they do have Aaron Hicks signed for 7 years, I think helps.
Yeah. See how many of those 7 years you can stay healthy for. So we asked last episode for people in the UK who maybe went to the series or watched the London series to message us, email us with more opinions on it. We thank you to Lee Jones, Aaron, and Duncan from Worcester, England, all emailed us a couple of interesting points. But the main one I want to talk about is basically how the TV is set up in the UK. So I believe it was Duncan who mentioned this, that the baseball partnered with BT Sports, which is also a partner with ESPN, to air the games. BT Sports, they said, he said, I'm trusting his numbers, has less than 2 million subscribers. So it's a subscription sports service in the UK. So in the, unless you had that network, you couldn't watch the games in the UK. They weren't free to everyone, like NFL games are, who partnered with Sky Sports, I believe. Sky Sports, the biggest subscription sports subscription provider that airs the games nationally for the football games. So I think it's kind of interesting, the difference between the two sports, at least in the first iteration of MLB UK. Wonder if they try and change that in the future to air the games to more people in the UK.
Well, I just thought of something because we were talking about this before we started recording, but can't someone in the UK just go on MLB.tv and buy a subscription online and get it?
Yes, they can, but I bet those games were blacked out.
Oh, those games in London were blacked out, but not the rest of the games. So that's the
The rest of the games, but you're not trying to. How are you going to sell someone on a $115 subscription service for a year to a sport they've never watched, no, other than airing the games free to them to start?
So I don't think it. I think if the. I have a different opinion on this now than I just thought of what you're saying. The fact that they went with a smaller sports subscription provider, that you have to, I guess it's more money. Anyway, I think that the fact that it was a spectacle for these two games, like, I think if people are going to watch it, they're going to watch it. More importantly is, how can they get the games afterwards? Can they have access to the games afterwards? Because to me, that's the biggest thing, is you're trying to lure people in for the one day or the one series, and then you're trying to get them afterwards. And I think the fact that the MLB TV exists is a big deal. And it's different than the NFL because, one, the NFL package is expensive for a small amount of games. MLB, you're definitely getting more of a value add because of the amount of games and such. To me, it's just better. Like,
yeah, I mean, it comes out to like less than a dollar a game if you watch every game.
And like MBAM, and I know they're licensing their technology all over the place, but they're the best technology as far as like getting the games. Like, you watch it in 4K, you can watch, the games are great when you stream them. So I don't necessarily think that's as big of an issue with what they're selling over there.
I mean, to be honest, I have no clue. I'm just going by what these guys said. Some of these guys went to the games. They had a blast. Everyone has had a blast. I know you had Keith on last episode. The George's Box guys covered it all. We're not going to keep talking about the London series because people are probably getting sick of it. But I think all in all, it was a great first event in London. For MLB.
Yeah, yeah. And no, thanks to the guys who wrote in and gave us all their thoughts on it, because it was it's interesting to read it. We should turn this into an article, I think. It would be better in written form.
Probably, than me butchering their paragraphs that they sent in. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Next episode will be on Thursday. We're going to be talking about All-Star Game, Home Run Derby. We're also going to be doing mid-season awards. So start thinking about that, Scott. Any final words?
Now, just again, thank you to everybody who came down to Tampa, all the people that were local to Tampa that came to the BP Crew event. You need to get, if you haven't gotten your tickets for July 20th yet, the Colorado Rockies series that we're doing, the game on July 20th in the Bronx, go get your tickets, $69. The t-shirt deadline is pretty much today. So if you are looking for your t-shirt for the game time, go and buy your ticket now. We have a whole lot of people. I need to look at what the numbers are right now, but I think it's close to 150 people, maybe even more than that for this game. Again, $69 gets you pregame. We need to see if the dugout is going to be open for this particular game, or if we're still shut down for unknown reasons, although they are very public.
Do we want to go? Do we want to go if they're back open?
If someone's pouring beer, I don't really care. I would never have eaten from there in the first place. So if you guys are eating from there, you know that they're healthy.
I didn't even know they had food.
Yes, you knew there was
so
a Taco Bell.
So I've never consumed Taco Bell. That's Taco Bell. That's not the dugout. I've never consumed anything from the dugout that didn't come out of a bottle or a can. So I'm safe.
Okay. But yeah, go get your tickets. And then the final one is at the end of August. So we'll have a nice little break in between them. But that'll be fun. But again, thanks to everybody who came out. I really had a blast. Couple more shout outs to guys from South Carolina. Seth and his girlfriend were there. I was able to talk with them for a while. Andrew Roloff, another Andrew, who I've been going, he's been hanging out with us on social media for a while, and he and I have always gone back and forth about t-shirt designs and such. So it was really cool to meet him. But again, just a blast to see everybody at these at the game.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show.
Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.